welcome to This Is The Way Phase 4. I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. This is a podcast about the stories Marvel Studios is telling on Disney+. It all started with WandaVision. And here in 2022, we've reached Season 1 of Moon Knight. Episode 3 is now streaming, and that's what I'm discussing today. The first episode debuted on March 30th, 2022, episode 2 on April 6th, and episode 3 on April 13th. This is the halfway point with a 6-episode season, meaning the finale should come May 4th. If you're planning on listening further, you must assume that any content officially released by Marvel Studios as of this recording is fair game for discussion. I don't set out to spoil you, but the entire premise of this podcast is discussion. So this is your last chance to avoid hearing about everything up to and including Moon Knight Season 1, Episode 3.
Final warning.
If you'd like to ask a question or point something out, please send emails to thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact with us on Instagram or Twitter at thewayphase4. You can also check out our webpage at facebook.com/thewayphase4. You can find additional links by going to linktree/thewayphase4. If you're looking for Star Wars content, you can try linktree at /thisisthewaypod and follow links there.
Now tell me this. If I send an email, where would I put the stamp? Technology.
Episode 3 is called The Friendly Type. The episode has a Disney Plus stated runtime of 53 minutes. But from just after the Disney Plus splash to the start of the end credits is around 44 minutes, 40 seconds. For this series, the descriptions of each episode are different on the Episodes tab and the main show page after you select and then start an episode. The thumbnail, or the short description, reads, "With Mark in the forefront and Harrow ahead, Mark and Layla navigate Cairo for intel." The longer description that accompanies the episode if you head back to the show page reads, "With Mark in the forefront and Harrow near Amit's tomb, Mark needs to navigate Cairo while putting his differences aside with Layla and Steven without jeopardizing their mission." The director for episode 3 is Mohamed Diab, and by the end of the series, he will sit in that chair for 4 episodes, including the premiere and the finale. Writers for episode 3 are credited as Beau DeMaio, Peter Cameron, and Sabir Pirzada. It's DeMaio that I take the most notice of because he worked on The Witcher and has the writing credit for the animated Netflix movie The Witcher: Nightmare of the Wolf. He will also be executive producing X-Men 97 for Marvel Studios, so we'll see more from him. Oscar Isaac is still Stephen Grant, Mark Spector, Moon Knight, Mr. Knight, and he adds another personality in this episode, though we're not shown this new persona. It is revealed that it exists because Mark and Steven both can't explain who's responsible during a certain break. May Kalamaui is Spectre's wife, Layla El-Fauli. F. Murray Abraham provides the voice for Khonshu, and Kareem El-Hakim is in the suit. He's the motion capture performer. Ethan Hawke is Arthur Harrow, and joining the cast this episode is Gaspard Ulliel as Anton Mogart. He's known as Midnight Man in the comics. Now, Ulliel passed earlier this year after a skiing accident in January, I think. Declan Hannigan plays Horus's avatar, which I only mention because he's been in The Witcher and The Last Kingdom. I scoured the other actors in the credits for things I had at least seen, but I think most of the cast just works in European TV. I think some of the actors are clearly talented. I know that The Crown is going to feature Khalid Abdallah as Dodi El-Fayed, so I suppose that warrants a mention for Selim, the avatar of Osiris. When you press play on episode 3, you get the Disney splash, then a previously on segment, but instead of placing the Marvel Studios slate and fanfare before the show, Mohamed Diab forgot this isn't the pilot episode, so he went right back to a cold open.
I found him with the scarab, living 20 minutes from our old place.
The action picks up with Layla, not Mark. She's out of focus and talking to a friend who is helping her forge documents. This whole scene is Layla working things out in her head for our benefit. It's exposition for us, the viewers. We hear, Whatever happened to her father in the desert is lost to the sands, and the forger recommends she stay away from certain places in Cairo to avoid trouble. We also hear the forger call Layla her father's little scarab. It's a not-so-small tip that Layla might be more than just Mark's wife. Layla collects her passport, and the Marvel Studios Slate animation begins.
The 20th week, we
I'm enjoying DJ Kaboo's mixes. This opening song is the same one that's going to be used over the closing credits sequence. Kaboo is sampling Batwana Speak by Warda, and from the translation that I saw online, it's a love song. I wonder then if this is Hathor singing to Khonshu, or maybe Hathor singing to someone else. That's something that will come up later in the episode. Listen to the lyrics. When you get close, I cherish your company. When you are far away, I feel your presence and your image is with me. I am dreaming of you. I am always calling for you. The first scene after the slate isn't Layla or Mark. It's Arthur in the desert with the scarab. He's walking slowly with the scarab from previous episodes. It's in compass mode, and the scarab is pointing straight ahead, and then it points down as he walks up a slope. He shouts to the crowd, in Arabic, "We found her." And I guess they mean Amit. So something's buried there, somewhere under their feet, which will either bring them to Amit, or to her tomb, or most likely, as we find out later, the Ushabti or statuette that contains her power. The cops, Bobby and Billy, are right there. Perhaps bodyguards to Harrow? They know Mark is tracking them. But Harrow doesn't care. The caravan following him is gonna start digging anyway.
She's here.
When we left off with Mark at the end of last episode, he was in his hotel room, I guess, in Cairo. Well, now he's racing across rooftops in Cairo to rescue an informant. The thugs who have this guy kill him just before Mark gets there, and they tell him, Mark, he'll never find Harrow. There are three of the thugs, two men and a teenager, but all of them would rather kill Mark than talk. At one point in the fight that ensues, Mark slaps rather than punch the teenager. Maybe this is an indication that this persona isn't as bloodthirsty as the Steven persona thinks. Later on in the fight, of course, the teen throws a knife at Mark's head, shouting, "In your face, foreigner," and Mark does, in fact, end up punching the kid later. Mark gets the upper hand, but the reflection in the main thug's shiny knife allows Steven to infiltrate the proceedings. Mark's got a break now, and he had the knife in his hand, but he wakes up in a cab on the way to the airport to go back to London. It seems Mark may have wrested control via the rearview mirror, I guess. He notices two of the thugs coming out the door, tells the cab driver to stop, gets out. The thugs seem confused, like, "Wait a minute, we just talked to you and just let us go, man." Mark gives chase through the streets, comes upon one of them at a market stall that, unfortunately for Mark, has a mirror. Steven again makes a case for mercy. Before there's a chance to act, he, Steven or Mark, is knocked out from behind by one of the thugs. He hits the pavement or the ground. Mark loses control of the body again, but this time it's not Steven. And it's definitely not Khonshu or Mr. Knight.
"Steven, what did you do?"
"I swear, it wasn't me."
"Then who was it?"
Someone used the knife Mark is holding to kill two of the thugs. When he wakes up, Mark does, he doesn't realize it's not one of the personalities we know. He thinks it's Steven. So it's gotta be another personality. This probably indicates it's Jake Lockley, the third persona known from the comic version of Moon Knight. Khonshu arrives and tells Mark to bring the remaining thug, the teenager, to the ledge to get him to talk. He says he'll talk. Mark agrees, reasoning, I guess, maybe a little fear will scare the kid into helping. He takes the teen to the ledge, holds him by a red scarf. A scarf the same color red as Arthur's cloak. It turns out, we should have known, these thugs are cultists. A praise Amit later, and the kid cuts himself free of Mark's grasp and basically he commits suicide rather than talk.
I thought he'd talk.
At times, it seemed like Arthur kind of knows what's going on. Supernaturally, he has this knowledge about their futures or what's going to happen or what they're thinking. Well, clearly, Khonshu does not have anything like that power because, well, the kid's dead. Mark doesn't know how to proceed. His leads went dead, literally, and Harrow has the scarab somewhere in the desert. Mark suggests contacting the other gods because surely they're not going to like Amit being unleashed. Khonshu doesn't like this suggestion, but he's going to go with it. He disappears to bring the moon in front of the sun, creating an eclipse in Egypt, which is his way, I guess, of summoning the Ennead. Harrow sees this sign as well at the dig site. He tells others, just keep digging. Mark wonders what's next, and Khonshu explains he's going to go through a portal and attend the meeting on his behalf. Mark will. They need to make the case that Harrow is looking for Amit. The portal does appear. It's on a wall, almost Harry Potter style, and he walks through.
Oh my days, we're inside. We're inside the Great Pyramid of Giza.
Stephen makes that remark while he's walking in with Mark. He makes it through a reflective surface of the stone. The pyramids have already been explored, though. No such room could exist. I think Stephen's wrong, and this is, I think, a different dimension. What we see is a large gallery extending up to the capstone with giant statues. I think there are also some small ones, some ushabtis. If you look to the lower left, toward the bottom of the gallery stairs, there seem to be dozens of small statuettes. I think these are statuettes of lesser gods that have been judged by the greater gods, the Ennead, of which few remain on Earth. Mark meets Yatzil, Avatar of Hathor, and she indicates there's a history there. I'm not going to get scholarly, or I'm trying not to, especially since the writers can do whatever they want with mythology, since there's no definitive source for Egyptian history, there's just interpretations. Here we go. Hathor itself means of the house of Horus, and she was a motherly or sisterly figure to Horus and Ra, the sky god and sun god. She helped the dead transition in the afterlife. So that leads me to believe Yatzil could have something to do with Amit, since Amit is the executioner of the dead. Hathor became a very important figure and had a lot of temples built to her, but she was eventually overtaken by Isis. In fact, this could be a nod to the power struggle going on right now in the show between the gods. Osiris and Isis, or Isis, as they said, I think, in the show, end up becoming two of the most worshipped gods in Egypt.
In attendance, Horus, Isis, Tefnut, Osiris, and Hathor, to hear the account of Khonshu.
So that's five names. Missing, though, seem to be Set, Nephthys, Shu, and Atum, though Geb and Nut also are listed in the Great Ennead, according to Encyclopedia Britannica. The Ennead may just be, whoever is the most powerful at the time. At this time of the meeting, it appears there are just five major gods left meddling with the affairs of humans, or trying not to meddle. It's not clear how this could all fit in the mythology of Marvel, but perhaps they're just powerful aliens like those from Asgard. I do think that the scenes we're seeing in the book passage Stephen read in episode 1, remember that was from a real ancient text. It's about the rift between gods and man, and I think that's what's at play right here. I think the major gods have been imprisoning minor gods in statues, kept there in that pantheon chamber of sorts, right next to the major seats. Apparently in charge is Osiris's avatar, Selene. But the Scottish avatar belongs to Horus, according to the credits, and Hathor is of the house of Horus. So perhaps there's some collusion there behind the backs of Isis and Osiris. It seems the Egyptian gods have opted for diversity, which I'm only pointing out because it would be impossible to completely represent the Earth's diversity in just nine people.
Manipulate the sky again, and we will imprison you in stone.
Spare me your self-righteous threats!
It's laid out right there. Osiris threatens Khonshu with imprisonment if he continues to be a problem in his banishment. I think it's clear that there are more avatars than just those that we're seeing here. At least, whatever gods have decided to stay behind. There are the five that sit in judgment right now from the Ennead, and Khonshu is here because he summoned them. Mark slash Khonshu accuses Harrow of working to free Amit. My issue, of course, is that Harrow arrives, and his rebuttal of that claim is just, you know, Mark is crazy. He even admits to being in the desert. The gods know Harrow was Khonshu's avatar, and his new avatar is accusing his old of looking for something, and the gods are just, we can't even bother to check. All they had to do was, hey, where did you come from? Let's go through that portal and let's look and see what's going on. In fact, Mark points out they're living in opulence in the Overvoid.
Avatars are not enough! We need the might of gods! Return from the opulence of the Overvoid before you lose this realm!
I found an article on slashfilm.com that explains the Overvoid might have many names in the comics. I think the Celestial Heliopolis. But it does seem to be somewhere those being called gods by some would go to leave petty affairs of mortal man behind. Or alien. So for those who stay behind, they're almost doing so out of pride, arrogance, maybe even jealousy. The others have left man to fend for itself. Seeing how angry and fragmented society has become. The part where they judge the hearts of humans might be the only way that gods will let a human soul into their heaven. It's like they're bouncers on a party and they don't want to let people in who are going to be a problem. You know, look at Amit. She's imprisoned away from their heaven. Maybe because she wasn't letting enough of the cool people in, or maybe she just wasn't being indiscriminate. Maybe she valued something other than the major gods and was letting the wrong people in, like Harrow.
Speak your purpose.
I call for judgment against Arthur Harrow!
The charges?
Conspiracy to release Amit! That is a heavy accusation, Khonshu.
His vision is obscured by jealousy, paranoia, and...
He is a deceiver!
Do not trust the word of a shamed god. No, Khonshu is unhinged, and his servant unwell.
It's hard for me to figure out if Khonshu is speaking the whole time before the Ennead, or if Mark does indeed become angry on his behalf. Osiris used a white magic to restrain Mark or Khonshu from striking Harrow in the chamber. The other gods are very ready to believe Arthur's claims that Mark is unwell. Mark does admit to it, but he also says that the fact that he needs help doesn't mean Harrow isn't dangerous, which is true. Hathor even calls the chamber a safe space if he feels exploited. Once more, Mark accuses Harrow, and Osiris says he's committed no offense. Based on what information? I don't know. Just on, I guess, previous encounters with Khonshu. Now, maybe I've got this wrong, and it's not Khonshu that Hathor is in love with. Maybe Hathor is in love with Amit, or their avatars are, or something like that. Now, that would definitely be on brand of late for Disney.
Mark, there is another way.
So Hathor's avatar comes to Khonshu's avatar after the meeting and confides. So is Yatzil doing this on behalf of her god? Is this Hathor speaking to Khonshu? Anyway, she tells him of a magi named Senfu who took the secret of Amit's burial location with him in his sarcophagus. I don't know how he knew that after he died that people would keep it there, but it was stolen and sold on the black market, the sarcophagus was. Why didn't Harrow know of this method? Or was it because the star drift would make it impossible to use this to find it? Maybe that was a non-starter for him? Anyway, Yatzil spills an enormous secret here. Harrow seems to know where to find Mark, though, as soon as he goes looking. So maybe Yatzil also told Harrow.
I'll take one.
Perfect one, sir. Best juice ever in the world.
Mark approaches a juice vendor in Cairo and asks about Senfu. The vendor slinks away, and who is there waiting but Layla? How convenient. She tells him He's in the right place and visited the right guy, but he's not Egyptian, to which Mark counters, she's in a part of Cairo that might not be so safe for her. Her reputation in the antiquities world may only be slightly better since she's the right race. So what a nice message for Marvel to send to us. Layla's arrival does have a benefit for Mark, as she says she knows how to proceed. She takes him on a ferry ride, I guess, across the Nile, which, I gotta admit, that'd be a cool thing to do, wouldn't it? Take a ferry across the Nile? She makes it clear she's not helping him. She's there to help everyone that would die if Harrow succeeds. They are going to see Anton Mogart. In the comics, this person is also known as Midnight Man because of the robberies he commits at midnight. Here, he's just a rich guy with a big antiquities collection.
I've heard that sound since it's our wedding.
There is clearly animosity between this husband and wife team. After they go ashore, Mark notices what looks like someone following them as he hides a backpack under the dock. Layla wonders if it's Harrow's men, and we will find out later it is not his men, it is him. There are people there partying near the shore, and then Mark and Layla head closer to Mogart's house. Mark thinks the games that Anton is putting on are just for show. Layla says he's getting El Merma lessons from the best. The competition is described in places as a fencing competition on horses in Upper Egypt, but that sounds a little bit more like jousting to me. One article called it spearing, and that's basically what it seemed like, riding horses with sharp sticks, but without armor. So Layla and Anton have a history, it turns out. The head of security for Anton, named Beck, says they have a lot to talk about since Layla and Anton met in Madripoor. That's a place we saw in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, remember, when Baron Zemo took Sam and Bucky there on his private jet to hopefully meet the power broker, who we were left to believe by the end of that show is Sharon Carter.
Oh, please. I hope you realize you need no excuse to drop by.
This is my husband, Rufino.
Mark is pretending to be someone else. Fitting for his dissociative identity disorder, don't you think? They're going right away to take a look at the sarcophagus, which is being stored outdoors in Cairo. And right now it's 41% humidity at the moment of this recording. There's also papyrus backed with plaster on top of the mummified remains, just sitting outdoors. They apparently couldn't find an indoor location to shoot, or they just opted for these outdoor glass pyramids. It's comparable to something you might see at the Louvre. Maybe it's done by the same architect, Yao Ming Pei, who died in 2019. They take a quick look, and Layla suggests, you know, Mark, let Stephen look. Stephen's there in the reflections from the glass, goading Mark, you know, give me control. Mark threatens to unleash the beast and do it the bloody way, so...
Fine, have it your way. All right, you are the worst. Check the cartonnage. Okay, what do I do?
I'll take that first piece and fold it over the middle piece.
This one?
Yes, that one.
Stephen guides him to folding centuries-old papyrus and plaster right there in this collector's presence. Beck does notice him poking around, touching the exhibit. So he approaches, gun drawn. Mark's reflexes kick in. He takes the gun. But now Layla is in harm's way with guns pointed at her. Anton suggests, I'm not stupid. I know there's more going on. But he doesn't. Layla tries explaining someone's going to kill millions of people. But Anton doesn't seem to care about that. And it's about that time that Arthur shows up. Once again, his calmness seems to counteract the call to alarm from Layla and Mark. The medium is the message, apparently. And this third party that's approaching offers up a shiny gold scarab, something Anton can touch and collect. Rather than deal with a woman he doesn't entirely trust, and her husband, and her stories. Harrow doesn't just charm Mogart. He seems to know something about the death of Layla's father, too. He says they're all connected. My guess is that Harrow killed her father as Moon Knight, Khonshu's avatar, when he was actually performing that duty. I think Mark was there, tried to stop him, but was mortally wounded. Then, maybe Harrow gave up his avatardom for Khonshu, and Mark, dying, may have inherited it. I just don't think it makes it more acceptable for Mark to kill her father knowingly, or even as the Avatar. Harrow says Spectre has a secret he won't share with Layla, because if he did, she would see him as he sees himself.
Mark, you don't tell her because you know that if you do, she'll see you exactly as you see yourself, as unworthy of love.
Harrow entices Mogart with a show of power, and he destroys the sarcophagus of Senfu with some chanting and his magical cane. The threat to his dig site seemingly neutralized, Arthur leaves. The security guards for Anton apparently don't notice Mark is gone. Moon Knight has arrived in his place. A battle ensues, the guards shooting, Mark attacking. Anton is ushered off by Beck. Layla joins in the fight. Moon Knight protects her and fights a large group of gunmen with his cloak, catching and flinging bullets back at them. Layla collects torn pieces of the cartonnage, and Beck attacks her while she's doing so. Somehow, this slight woman holds her own quite well against a trained, bigger bodyguard. Moon Knight is holding his own as well. That is until Mr. Knight takes control. Steven's version of the armor takes the place of the Khonshu ceremonial armor mid-fight. Mr. Knight appears. It does not go well. Spearmen poke several holes in Mr. Knight before Mark's version of Moon Knight does return. At that point, however, he's kind of pinned down, literally. It isn't until Mark sees Anton knock down his wife in the horse ring that he summons the strength to unpin himself and use the spears that were impaling him to impale the henchman instead. Anton tries riding off, but gets a Moon Knight blade to the back.
We need a car.
Yeah, come on.
Tick tock, Mark Spector. Tick tock.
Mark and Layla escape then in an SUV. On the drive, Layla questions why Arthur seemed to know so much, and Mark brushes it off, but clearly, Harrow did know something. Layla both accepts it and doesn't, saying every time she thinks there are no more secrets between the two of them, another emerges. This is a woman who either just recently learned about her husband's disorder or knew full well going in. And he already showed us in their previous discussion he's not forthcoming about his disorder. It just doesn't ring true here for me that she would be surprised about just about anything. In this universe, she just saw Mark turn into a superhero. And he survived being impaled. Now they're driving out into the desert somewhere inside of the pyramids, and Harrow has people watching the roads. They're allowed to pass.
I've spotted them.
Mark and Layla then try reconstructing the cartonnage on the hood of the SUV when they stop, wherever they think is most important to stop, with tape or something. It's not going well, so Layla says they need Steven. So this educated woman who deals in antiquities all the time thinks it might be better to give Steven a chance, even though she doesn't really know. I mean, all she's seen is a bunch of books in his apartment, right? She already knows that Steven and Mark are the same person and that he's got this disorder. But there's this repeated insistence by Mark, you know, don't let Layla see me talking to Steven or Steven talking to Mark. I don't know. It's weird. Maybe it's like, he doesn't want to use the bathroom in front of his wife kind of a thing. Mark knows Layla knows what's happening, right? But he doesn't want to let her see what his actual discussions with his alter ego look like. So Mark tears off the mirror, side view mirror of the SUV, walks off, and Steven gets to work and almost immediately knows what he's doing. Layla creeps up, says hello, and Steven seems pleased to see her. So perhaps stuffed in this persona is all of Mark's love. Maybe he knows it's like a liability to Khonshu's quest. Then Steven says something that's really convenient and false. Egyptians invented modern navigation. That is absolutely not true. Egyptians may have devised an ancient method of navigation, but first, they were hardly the only civilization or culture to do that. And second, they most definitely do not exist in modern times. And modern navigation does not use the moon and stars. we use global positioning satellites, which at best you can make an argument would be derived from a similar principle. So if he had said Egyptians invented ancient navigation, that would be much more accurate.
We should be able to triangulate the stars into coordinates, right? Let me just scan it.
Oh, well, Senfu marked that tomb like 2,000 years ago, and stars drift over time. Not much as far as stars go, but it can mean the difference between us searching miles and miles away from where we're supposed to be looking. So unless we know exactly what the sky looked like on that date, we're buggered.
I remember that night. I remember every night.
So this whole episode is kind of like a treasure hunt where we have a problem presented and then a solution almost immediately presents itself. We don't know where to find Harrow. Well, Khonshu has the answer. We don't know where to find Harrow again. Layla has a possible answer. Anton's sarcophagus is destroyed. Well, let's grab the stuff. We can't put it together. Let's call on Steven. He's going to put it together. Now, we don't know what the sky looked. So now Khonshu is going to turn back the night sky to the night Senfu marked the place where Amit's Ushabti was buried. Now, by doing so, Khonshu knows he's going to be imprisoned in stone. He tells Steven to tell Mark to free him. Layla uses a computer tablet to triangulate a spot at 29 degrees north, 25 degrees east. Now, if you just type that into Google Maps, you end up in Libya. The location is southwest of the Siwa Oasis in western Egypt, a long way from the pyramids. The last I can remember Libya being involved in the MCU was in episode 1 of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier with the restricted airspace problem. I don't think it's terribly important, and I don't think the MCU had to worry about people traveling to the location to start digging for this imaginary statuette, but I don't know. Still, the location is named. While this is happening, the Ennead is meeting, hands held together with purple magic in a pentagon, since there are only 5 of them. The avatars are chanting. I did hear the word Ushabti in the chanting, and I think that's because that's what they're using to imprison Khonshu. Steven loses consciousness in the sands, and before he did, he mentioned how he felt the power leaving him. Layla is trying to wake Steven and Mark, but perhaps she should worry most about Jake waking up.
You were right about Khonshu. And in the end, he left us no choice.
Salim, avatar of Osiris, is now talking to Arthur. What is Arthur doing there? Did Osiris call an audible here and bring in the former avatar of Khonshu as a sign of goodwill? Do they really feel it's not worth looking into at all that he's going to release Amit? Not only do they imprison Khonshu, but they allow his former avatar in to gloat. That's what Arthur does. He gloats. I do wonder, though, about this scene, because if I'm honest here, Harrow actually comes off the most sympathetic he has in all 3 episodes. He is either putting on one heck of a show in the slightest of chances that one of the other gods is listening. And maybe that's what he's doing. But maybe he is also sincere when he blames Khonshu for breaking him. Harrow said he enjoyed dealing out pain on his behalf, but if he hadn't been broken, he never would have known the value of healing. He also says he's going to do what Khonshu could not. But Harrow is seeking to release Amit. So is that what Khonshu was really up to after all? You think about it. Otherwise, wouldn't he have just suggested that Mark destroy the scarab? Is Khonshu's ban because he and Amit were actually in love or something like that? Were he and Amit actually accused of trying to overthrow the gods? Maybe that's why Amit was imprisoned and Khonshu banished. So it just brings up a lot of questions. This scene is really confusing to me. It was put there on purpose. You know, it's also possible that Amit is the one speaking through Harrow here, and Khonshu tormented Amit. It would certainly give a slightly more ominous meaning to the final words of the episode spoken by Harrow in the Great Chamber to the statuette, or Ushabti, of Khonshu.
Your torment forged me. I owe my victory to you.
Despite the problems that I inevitably find, of the three episodes released so far, this one was the most enjoyable, in my opinion. I really thought the scene with the sky was really cool looking, the moon going back and forth like that line. It looked really cool. And I also appreciate that they included shots of other people seeing what was happening. So this wasn't just something that was happening in the local area where Khonshu and Mark and Layla were. This was happening, I guess, in the entire world could see what was going on. Now, that doesn't mean they were traveling back in time. I mean, it could have just been manipulating the sky to show an image of what the stars look like. But some people have been suggesting, you know, this was actual time travel. I don't think so, but including those shots of people looking up and seeing the sky does leave some of those doors open. I liked this episode a lot, and the Steven persona had the least amount of screen time, so I think that might be one of the reasons. Harrow also seemed to be the least mustache twirly. He seemed to be a much more believable threat, in my opinion. Khonshu also showed some power here, other than just showing up and using it through his avatar. He actually showed some power. We met some of the other avatars, and while on the surface, we have this struggle with Mark. We also seem to have one in the Ennead. To me, that's more interesting. To me, the show is just as interesting, or maybe even more so, if Mark doesn't have to deal with the personas. Now, I understand it's a big deal for people who know someone with dissociative identity disorder, but I can't imagine that that's really super common. And so far, I don't have a moral issue with the show. But even if the Jake persona turns out to be a real crazy person, I mean, like a legitimate madman, I'm not going to hold that against Mark or Steven. I'll say again, this show needs to tie into the MCU Phase 4 for me to care more about it. I do think we're on the right track here, but we only have 3 episodes left to make it clear why we should care. The gods are taking this laissez-faire, hands-off approach to humanity. And maybe that's really a bad thing in this case. I'll be back again with another discussion podcast sometime after episode 4 becomes available on April 20th. Alex Minahan, not Beau DeMaio, will join Peter Cameron and Sabir Pirzada with writing credits next week. Minahan wrote and worked on Bosch and was an assistant on the Man in the High Castle series for Amazon Prime. Moorhead and Benson are back in the director chairs. That's all for today, so please check out our links on Linktree at linktr.ee/thewayphase4 and send your email to thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com. If Star Wars is more your bag, we've got our April news update you can check out. It's live now, and links to that can be found at our Linktree for that show at linktr.ee/thisisthewaypod. Thank you so much for listening to This Is The Way Phase 4's Season 1, Episode 3 discussion of Moon Knight. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.